Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, good morning. It's, it's the 11th of May, 2008, and that makes this Solder Smoke 83. All kinds of developments here to report. I guess we didn't do Solder Smoke last weekend, probably because we were on the road and doing some traveling here. I'm not much of a traveler. I really must be in the wrong line of work. But my wife insists on having us all go out and see and enjoy the countries that we're living in. So thanks to her, and I really mean thanks to her, we were out last week on a trip to the amazingly beautiful Italian island of Ischia. There's not too much of a solder smoke connection here. I'll try to make some connection to the island, but every once in a while I get emails from guys who say they enjoy a bit of Italian travelogue here, so we'll throw it in. Ischia is down near the Bay of Naples, we drove down, put the car on the ferry, and out to the island we went. Amazingly beautiful island, volcanic. The kids got a kick out of there were beaches there where the sands were naturally heated by the volcanic activity below. We had our lunch cooked in the sand. There's a restaurant there on one beach where they'll take your chicken and fries and wrap it up in aluminum containers and bury it in the sand. In the morning, you come back at lunchtime and you've got some geothermally cooked chicken. Thought that was pretty cool. And just a great time. You could look back from the island and see Mount Vesuvius. Just wonderful. When I travel, I used to as a real QRP enthusiast, as a real knack victim, I used to always try to bring a little transceiver with me. But for me, that was a bit too much. So I now limit myself to bringing my little Sony shortwave receiver, the model with the BFO in it, and I limit myself to some shortwave and hamband listening while on the road. That and my BlackBerry now constitute kind of a portable ham shack. Early morning radio is very important to me. I like to come into the shack in the morning, turn on the receiver. I got the HW8 going right now. Let's see. There's some sort of contest going on. 80 meters CW there. And I also like to get the email. And I guess I'm getting kind of to be a stick in the mud. But I, when we travel, one of the things that bothers me about traveling is that, well, I'm out of the shack. There's the shack in the morning. It's not there. But, between the Sony receiver and the BlackBerry, it's kind of like a portable shack. So I did some shortwave listening from Ischia. And you always hear things in those kind of circumstances that you might not hear when back at home. And I was very pleased to discover some really great early morning 80-meter Italian tech talk. The frequency is 3643, and a bunch of Italian hams get together on that frequency early in the morning. And it's, you know what I mean, it's tech talk. It's like they're talking good technical stuff. It's obviously not appliance radio discussions. They're talking about old tube-type equipment, some of the gear, some of the old boat anchor gear that we all know and love. It's mostly Alfredo, IK2EMY, up in Como, up near Lake Como, and then IZ1, EKV, Demetrio. And I really enjoyed listening to them Also, I found that that little Sony shortwave radio is great for those of you who are taking care of kids like I am. It's great to carry that little shortwave radio around. My kids, the hotel had this amazing geothermally heated swimming pool, and the kids wanted to spend, if it was up to them, they would have been in that pool 24/7. So we let them stay in there quite a bit, and of course I was in lifeguard mode, and it was great to have that little shortwave radio there with one of the earbuds in. Could keep an eye on them and also monitor 3643. my kids are big enough and they can swim well enough that I can do that. But it was fun. It's great to be able to carry that little radio around. Also in Europe, people will not necessarily consider you a total weirdo for doing that because you'll see people all the time with these kind of receivers with the antenna up and the earbuds in, and what they're doing is they're listening to some a distant football or soccer match from some far off place that may be carried by shortwave or something like that. So I figured that anybody looking at me probably figured I was following some soccer match, and was that of course totally normal. Little did they know. This is ISKI related. It could be in the mailbox, but I'll mention it now because when we were out on ISKI with my BlackBerry, I got an email from Alan WA9IRS, who said that he's become a big fan of Solder Smoke. Thanks for the feedback there, Alan. But it was really kind of weird because he related in the email that he had spent some time in Italy years ago in the Naples area and talked about how beautiful the Bay of Naples is, and he recalled seeing Vesuvius, and I had seen Vesuvius just for the first time the day before. And was sitting on an island that you could see Vesuvius from. So it was kind of weird to get a message like that at the same time that I was sitting there looking at the volcano. But Alan was prompted to write by my mention of Gene Shepard and his experiences on Chicago's Radio Row. I think New York's Radio Row probably gets more attention, but the Windy City has had its own Radio Row, and the same kind of fond memories are generated by mention of that place. And Alan wrote up a really nice report about what it was like to go with his friends down to the Chicago Radio Row on a Saturday, and in search of important gear. And it brought back for me. It was very much in parallel with what Shepard described. He talks about here, and see, I'll read you bits of it here. In preparation for a trip to Surplus Row, you needed to remember to bring along several important items. Most of us made the mistake of not knowing about this on our first trip, but we never forgot on subsequent visits. A flashlight was an important item to bring along. The low light levels in some of the stores meant that you had to use a flashlight to look in all those dark corners. We found quite a bit of stuff in those corners that we would have overlooked or never seen without a flashlight. You might very well ask the question why anyone would venture into these places, let alone spend any amount of time browsing through the equipment stacked in the aisles. By way of explanation, part of the allure of these places, quite apart from the individual treasures that we carted home after time, was the sensory experience. Yeah. This included the sight, smell, and touch that were a part of the quest for that receiver, transmitter, or piece of test equipment that you needed for your most recent project. I've already described the lighting conditions under which these stores were operated. As far as amateurs were concerned, this was probably a sort of reverse moth and flame phenomenon where less light served as greater attraction. Yeah. I know. It's the same kind of thing goes on at Hamfest. You know the good stuff is in those boxes under the table. In addition, visually, since most of the equipment was originally for military purposes, it was colored in various shades of olive drab, black wrinkle finish, battleship gray, or satin aluminum finishes. Due to this inherent camouflage coloring, you had to really carefully search for what you were trying to find. Actually, even before you crossed the threshold of any of these surplus stores, you became aware of the presence of surplus through a vague, slightly sweet industrial military odor that permeated the atmosphere. He describes it very well, and it, for those of us who know what he's talking about, we know exactly what he's talking about. It was a mixture of smells, including Bakelite panels, phenolic assemblies, stale cigar smoke, coil varnish, moisture fungus proofing, MFP, and cosmoline. All of these fragrances blended together into a sort of eau de surplus that was the characteristic no matter which store you entered. The final sensory experience was touch. Touch included moving or rotating the super smooth vernier tuning dials, the panel switches that clicked on and off with authority, the various access panels that latched closed and opened on well-machined hinges, and the embossed name and nomenclature plates that identified each and every item as to model, serial number, manufacturer, and other vital information. All of us knew that this equipment was the best of the best, and we had the opportunity to buy and work with it. Yeah, that's it. That's the stuff. Very appropriate for me this morning because a little bit later on, my good friend Giorgio, Italian I-Zero Yankee Radio, a very fine business, OM from here in Rome, are going to go to the little flea market store that I described in the last episode. I think I wrote about this on the blog. My wife and I last week went to a little surplus store, one of these little kind of charity shops, where they take the old stuff that people are throwing out and they kind of fix it up and clean it up and sell it and have the money go to take care of the needy. Anyway, I'm in there and I'm looking through all the stacks of old records and stuff like this, and there on the floor, I said to myself, there might be a piece of radio gear in there, and there was. And it looks like a BC-348. It looks like one of the old bomber receivers, just sitting there on the floor. And I looked at it, and my first instinct, of course, was to buy it. But you got to discipline yourself. I mean, I think there has to be some sort of focus and specialization in this thing, or else things just get totally out of hand. And I just a while back said, I'm not getting into the military stuff. I'm just not. So Heath kits, Halicrafters, Drake 2Bs, Homebrew QRP, all this kind of stuff, that's fine. But, man, once I start bringing angry 50s into the house, I've crossed the line. So no military gear for me. But I mentioned it on our 20-meter phone evening roundtable here. And Giorgio said he wants to take a look at it. So we're going to go down to the store, which is about a block from my house here, later this morning. And hopefully I'll get Giorgio up here in the shack. We speak every night with about four or five other guys on 14-320 at around 20-30 hours local when the band is pretty much dead. Occasionally we bump up against some German radio amateurs and have to deconflict the frequencies, but usually 20 meters cooperates by dying an hour or so before we get on the air. Anyway, my good friend Giorgio, who's a great guy and who has a spectacular three-element quad up on top of his house, is going to come by and we'll go down and check out the sort of BC-348 looking radio. What else do I have here? Oh, man, I want to report. I think, I don't know if I told you guys this, but I did some major antenna work. I moved beyond the 30-gauge wire. I decided to live large, to live dangerously, to go out on the edge and risk confrontation with the neighbors. I replaced the 30-gauge wire. It was okay while it lasted, but it didn't last. Something happened to it. A bird might have flown into it. It was that thin. The wind probably was what got it. But down it came. And anyway, I decided I didn't want to make, bi-monthly visits up to the roof to replace my evaporated antenna. So I went out and bought some, went to a little electrical supply store here in the corner and bought some regular AC zip cord and unzipped it. And now I have up on the roof, my old antenna, it was going from the window down to the street, which is, of course, the wrong direction. Now it goes out the window up to the roof, which is pretty high. I mean, I got good views of the horizon in all directions. And just to keep things simple, I want one antenna. I don't want a whole bunch of coax coming in a bigger place. That'd be okay. But in a small apartment in central Rome, that's a formula for all kinds of chaos. So one antenna, and it's just an end-fed wire. I guess it's about 100 feet long, and the wire goes out the window, up about 30 feet to the roof, and then about 90 feet along the roof. It's got a good view of the horizon in all directions. With my little T-Match tuner, I can tune it up on all bands so far from 80 through 15. I haven't tried on 10 yet, but I'm sure it'll tune up on 10. And, when you do antenna work, there's a sequence of events that you're looking for. One, you want to go up there and you want it to be a nice day. Normally it's not. It's one of the rules of amateur radio that when you decide that it's a convenient moment to work on the antenna, it'll either be snowing or there'll be some sort of hurricane in the area. Anyway, I lucked out and had a beautiful morning. The thing went, the antenna construction went very well. I didn't provoke the anger of any of the neighbors. As a matter of fact, I don't think most of them knew that it went up there, and it's not really visible from the street. So anyway, the whole thing went together well. And then the next thing you want to have happen with your new antenna is you want to come down and find out that you can, in fact, tune it. And I could, and tuned it up on all the bands, so that was great. And then the next thing, and this is the most important bit when you put up a new antenna, what you really want to have happen next is you want to fire the thing up and work some amazing DX that you never could have worked without it. That's the fun part. And man, it happened. It really did. I put the antenna up, and I think it was the very next morning, I fired this thing up on 40 meter CW with the HW8. And guys, I had never even heard a stateside station here before. I'd never even heard one. But there he was on 40 meters, a station in Pennsylvania, banging out a CQ. It was like a miracle. I called him, and on the first shot, I worked the homeland from Italy with an HW8 and an end-fed wire. And I tell you, I was one happy radio amateur. It was really a great moment. And so I guess the next thing you have to be able to do is to gloat. And that's when the 8:30 p.m. local 20 meter rag chew net comes in, because I was able to get on the air with the locals and tell them that I had crossed the pond with the HW8. Now the guys I talked to are some pretty big DXers, big gun DXers, but they were very kind, and they pretended to be mightily impressed with my Pennsylvania QSO. So that was good news. Hey, there's some, you know, bad news on the antenna front too, and I'm sure you guys have heard about it. I just wanted to mention it. I'm of course referring to the passing of L.B. Sebeck, the antenna guru, the guy who taught so many of us so many things about antennas and antenna theory. Like everybody else, I've been visiting his site for years, reading his articles, getting all kinds of inspiration. And like everybody else, I was really saddened to hear that he's gone. But of course, he in a way he lives on through his work and his contributions. Everybody said what a kind person he was. I think somebody referred to him as the gentle giant, and I think that kindness and concern came through in his writing. And his articles, his books, his website, all that continues. And I guess the best way to pay tribute to LB is to study his work, learn from it, and get out there and build some antennas and wiggle the ether. I'm sure he'd be pleased to know that the people are doing that. So anyway, 7-3 LB. Let's see, what else did I wanted to mention? Going through my list here, upcoming projects, talking about upcoming projects, I've got an urge to put up a beacon transmitter. I guess this is our friend Stan on Malta, who 9H1LO, who has inspired me in this area. I have a little beacon transmitter that I built, a 10-meter crystal-controlled beacon transmitter, but I had been using it with some specially modified software from Ralph Taggart, and that I ran on my old, I guess it was the old 486 computer, but the transmitter's about the size of my hand, and then the computer's generating the CW, and it, well, there's not enough room for all that in the shack anymore. So I ordered one of these little beacon chip keyers. I forget which one I ordered, but it's on the way. The chip is on the way, and I'm going to put the chip in the box with the transmitter, and I'm going to hook the whole thing up to the solar panels, and I'm going to beacon away. And I hope to get lots of reports, because that's the fun bit about the. Oops, man! I hit the gong early. Oops, that was a disregard that gong. That gong was just a test. I want to get the beacon going. I want to, the other projects that are sort of on the horizon now that I've squared away my HW8 antenna and 20-meter DSB problems. Listening to 80 meters made me think that's a band I want to get on. So I think I'm going to build an 80-meter double sideband, a transceiver, just low power here, and get involved in hopefully some early morning phone QSOs. The early morning CW QSOs have been great, and I've been meeting a lot of guys, but I must admit I am essentially a phone kind of guy, and as you might tell from me blabbering on here into this microphone every couple of weeks, but anyway, I want to build a double sideband rig for 80 meters, and that might be one of my projects. I was joking with Michael, Alpha Alpha 1 Tango Juliet, our man in Vermont. I was telling him that on this next project, I'm going to use a rather different approach. Listen to this. I think you'll find this novel and intriguing. This time, I think I'll design the rig first and then build it. Get that? Design and build. Up until now, I've been following a pattern that many of you are familiar with, and that is you build it first, and then in the process of figuring out why the thing doesn't work, then you go back and and get into the design phase. This is a weird form of what we, I guess, we would call reverse engineering, but a special kind of reverse engineering familiar to those of us in the, the hacker end of the of the electronic building and design skills spectrum. I don't think they teach it this way in the BSEE programs. I'd be surprised if that was the way they taught it, but that's the way a lot of us do it. And I'm trying to reform. As a matter of fact, I'm trying so hard to reform. I have a box filled with PC boards with different bits and pieces of circuits on it. You know, one of them will have a balanced modulator, the other will have an audio amplifier, the other one will have a series of RF amplifiers. And I'm really tempted to pull this box out and just say, hey, let me see what I can lash together here and see if I can turn it into an 80-meter double sideband transceiver. No, I'm fighting that temptation. I'm going to leave those things aside. And, you know, the new project is going to begin literally with a blank sheet of paper and an open page on LT Spice, an open book, EMRFD at my side, a calculator nearby. This is going to be the first step. I promise you, no more of this build design stuff. I'm trying to grow. I'm trying to move forward. let's see. What else do I have here? Kind of odds and ends here. One thing caught my eye. I love, you know, I always talk about Sprat. What a fantastic magazine. I never leave the house on a shopping excursion or anything like this without sticking at least two copies of Sprat in my pocket. And even though, I've probably read every one of these things several times, but still, every once in a while I come across something and I just sit back and say, wow, I really want to build this one. And Sprat number 108, which was published in autumn of 2001, made the trip to Ischia with me. And one morning as I was sitting there drinking my coffee, listening to the 3643 guys talk about DX100s, I came across an article by Glenn Yingling, W2UW, from Newark Valley, New York, an experimental transmitter, the ET1. I don't know if you guys have seen this one, but it's really fantastic. It's the transmitter that uses just an MPF 102, just one MPF 102. It's not a transmitter, it's a transceiver. He's got the MPF 102 mounted on a three-pole double-throw switch. And when the switch is in one position, the MPF 102 FET is connected and forms a regen receiver. It's on 40 meters. And so you throw the switch in one direction, and the gate, the source, and the drain all hook up to the capacitors, resistors, and coils of a regenerative receiver. You throw the switch in the opposite direction, and this MPF 102 hooks up to a crystal in the output network and a key for a simple, very simple, crystal-controlled, very low-power transmitter. It's just amazing. It's great. I got to build one of these things. And he has been working, guys, all over the country with this thing, and Canada. So there's DX involved. But he says here, there's one line here from Glenn's article that really got me. It says here, during most of my QSOs, when I commented on my transceiver consisting of only 15 parts and that was running only 20 milliwatts and that the power was coming from a D-cell flashlight battery, I expected some statements of amazement. Instead, I mostly got a ho-hum. So I guess that it may be true about ham radio operators being mostly appliance ops. However, I would like to give a special thanks to Lenny, W2BBH, who gave me a holy cow and congrats. Yeah, Glenn, we'll give you a big holy cow and lots of congrats because this thing's a real beauty. And I'm going to try to get more information about it up on the blog. But congratulations to you, Glenn, and congratulations and thanks to the guys in the GQRP Club who put out Sprat every quarter. Any of you guys, Solder Smoke listeners, if you're not subscribing to Sprat, well, as they used to say in the Army, you're just wrong. you got to get this thing. I mean, I tell you, when I come home from work and I find that little plastic envelope was spread in there, no matter what happened at the work site that day, it's a good one. It's a good day. So so talk to your local Sprat representative and get on the mailing list there. You really need to be part of this. All right, let's see. Speaking about getting the word out and communicating, which is what we're all about, of course, I'm responding to a suggestion here from our man in he used to be our man in Bangalore, now he's our man in Singapore. I'm talking about Ramakrishnan of EU3RDD, a regular Solder Smoke listener and contributor participant. Ramakrishnan has made the big move to the island nation of Singapore. There, good luck to you in the big QSY to Singapore, Ramakrishnan. And but before he left India, he said, "Hey, look, you know, he liked my Gadgeteer news page. This was a part of an operation that Mike and I set up because Solder Smoke listeners would say, hey, look, you know, you mentioned all these great websites, and then we don't know where they are, or we don't know what you're talking about. So Mike and I set up a couple of pages that were basically kind of websites to provide more detailed information about the stuff that we were jabbering about on Solder Smoke. Well, Ramakrishnan made a good suggestion. He said, look, why don't you do this in the form of a blog? And for those of you who have who are a little bit out of the kind of the loop about developments in the IT world, a blog is just it's a simplified, for, at least from the writer's standpoint, a simplified website. The key thing about it is that, well, a couple of key things. One, it's easy to update. It also allows for people to comment on the updates, so it'd be a really excellent way to share ideas and reactions and thoughts to things discussed on Solder Smoke. And then here's a really good part. You can subscribe to it. I mean, I think most Solder Smoke listeners get Solder Smoke via a subscription to our RSS feed. You just plug this into your iTunes or iPod or other kind of MP3 aggregator, not aggregator, but downloading software. And most guys have the Solder Smoke episode just automatically placed into their MP3 players, and off they go. And the next thing you know, we're being listened to on the way to work in Cincinnati or Trans-Pacific in the flight going to Tokyo. The RSS feed on the blog allows you to do the same thing. You could subscribe to the blog, and every time I update it, you'll get alerted to it. I subscribe. I just check to see how it works, and when I click on the little RSS button in my Firefox web browser, I can ask to be subscribed to the blog, and then every time an update is placed in the blog, a little message appears on my my Google screen. So there's many ways of doing this, but the idea is that you'll get an update. I am going to try to update the new Solder Smoke blog every morning or every other morning, just with little bits and pieces, bits of news that come in. I get lots of emails from folks, and some of the stuff will eventually be discussed in the podcast, but some of it will not. And I'll share some of the stuff that doesn't make it into the podcast. I'll just put it up on the blog. Anyway, I encourage you guys to check it out. I hope to make it a kind of a fun and useful adjunct to the Solder Smoke effort. It's at http://soldersmoke.blogspot. That's BLOGSPOT, .com. So soldersmoke, .blogspot, .com. Plug that into your browser. You'll see what I'm talking about. It's really neat and easy. It takes me about 2 minutes to update the thing every morning, so it's no hassle. And I think it might provide a good way to kind of keep the solder smoke community together here. What else? Oh, a couple things. One of the first things I put there up on the blog, and you'll see it if you go there, is I was repenting for all the bad things I said about software-defined radios. You'll recall that after my struggle with computer problems, I decided that I was in favor of hardware-defined radios, HDRs. But right after that happened, somebody sent me a website about Papa Alpha 3 Foxtrot Whiskey Mike's new software-defined radio that's been placed on the web. And I'll tell you, it's not my kind of technology, really, but the results are really impressive and a lot of fun. And multiple listeners can tune into this thing at the same time. You get waterfall displays that show things that are happening all across the 80 and 40 meter bands. You could see the waveforms from SSB conversations. You can actually see the dots and dashes of Morse code going across at different frequencies. I really recommend that you check it out. Also, when you go and visit the pages with this thing, there's some pages associated with the SDR receiver, and he shows the actual hardware that brings the signal into the computer. And PA3FWM has definitely employed the ugly construction techniques, and I say that in the best sense of the word. So check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it. I've also put on the blog some kind of troublesome news here. Dan's Small Parts. Many of us depend on Dan out there in Missoula, Montana, for a periodic restocking of our junk boxes. I certainly do. And I've really appreciated his hard work and good service over the years. There's a notice on his site this week that says that there's been a bad accident. No further details provided, but that he's temporarily closed, but we'll be back. So we wish Dan the best of luck there. And I'm not sure whether the accident involved him. I hope not, or just the operations of his company. But whatever it is, Dan, we wish you a speedy recovery and hope you get back in business soon. Your services are definitely used and appreciated. I was doing some early morning web searching, and Alpha Alpha 1 Tango Juliet, I mentioned Michael quite frequently. I noticed that his activities with the Zener diodes were picked up and reported on Radio Havana Cuba, Arnie Coro's show. So I think that was great. Michael and I exchanged some emails afterwards, saying that we both listened to a lot to Radio Havana Cuba as kids as part of our shortwave listening experiences, and it's kind of a kick for Michael to find himself now being reported on by Radio Havana Cuba. Very fine business, great. All right, let's see what else. On the cluster, cluster map thing that I play with, I keep track of new red dots on the map indicating that where we have listeners. And to the Solder Smoke webpage, recently we've got new red dots, one over Panama, one over Tasmania, one over Sri Lanka, one out in the Eastern Caribbean, and another one in Central China. So the web of Solder Smoke listeners continues to expand, and that's great. Guys, I think that brings us to Solder Smoke Mailbag. Got a nice, thoughtful email from Stuart, and it was regarding my comments on using oscilloscopes to see if a signal is clean. And I'm paraphrasing here, but I hope I get it right. I was saying that I don't think my 20 megahertz scope is really all that useful in determining whether I've got harmonics in my signal from the homebrew double sideband transmitter. And I was saying that I was thinking that, you know, because the harmonics obviously would be on a 20 meter rig, the harmonics would be way beyond 20 megahertz. And they'd be falling into the range where the ability of the scope to pick up those signals is very limited. But Stuart makes the point that I think he was saying, and I don't have his email right in front of me right now, but he was thinking he was saying that that on the harmonics, even if they were significantly down 20 dB, or I think he said 40 dB, on a scope you'd only see that as 1% distortion, and you might not even be able to detect it. So it made me wonder, perhaps my 20 megahertz, my simple little Hamag 20 megahertz scope is not as useless as I've been thinking it is. And I'd appreciate comments on that. I find it quite useful. I hope I'm not fooling myself. But obviously it tells me if things are like really, really bad. So, let me know what you think. Is my 20 megahertz Hamag scope worth continuing with, or am I fooling myself here with the beautiful sine wave patterns that I sometimes see on the on the screen? Our good friend Tony Fishpool, G4WIF, responded to my comments about simple spectrum analyzers, and he sent in an article here that that comes from Spratt. I wish I knew which issue it is, but it's a great article called "A Spectrum Wave Meter: A Simple Approach to Spectrum Analyzer," and he uses 555 timer chips and in a scheme to come up with simple spectrum analyzer equipment. And very interesting and a great article. If anybody wants more info, let me know and I'll get you in touch with Tony, and I'll come up with the and it was also released as a Kanga kit. So very fine business indeed, and thanks for sending that along, Tony. Let's see what's next. We also got an email on the same subject from a fellow in the UK named Phil. He doesn't have a call sign, but he's quite knowledgeable, quite technically proficient, and says that he thinks he should become a radio amateur. I think he should also. He's in the UK, and he's looking for some support. He said some of the local clubs that he's contacted have been less than responsive. I have the details on Phil, and if I suggested that he try to get in touch with the ever helpful fine business radio amateurs from the GQRP club. So Phil seems like a very nice fella, and if anybody in the UK is interested in helping him out, please shoot me an email and I'll get you guys in touch. We're on the verge of 4 days in May, and our correspondent, Bob, W8, Whiskey 8, Sierra X-Ray, will be on the job with a microphone from the convention floor of 4 days in May. So if you're going to FDIM and you're approached by someone seeking an interview, please cooperate. He is indeed a duly authorized Solder Smoke correspondent. Later this morning, I'm going to put on the show here, right? As soon as we finish the mailbag, a report from Steve WA0PWK, who was our correspondent in at OzarkCon. So this is the springtime, the time of year for conventions, and I'm glad that we have a great report coming up from Steve, and I'm sure Bob's going to send us in some great reports just like he did last year. And good luck to everybody going out to FDIM. What a great event. One of these days we're going to try to go. Got a nice message from Matt, KC8COM. He emailed us a while back looking for some suggestions on on kits that he was thinking about trying to get into the kit business, and wanted to know what kind of kits I thought would be useful or appreciated. And I suggested that he put together some sort of kit that would allow guys to build real simple QRP CW transmitters just to get started in the homebrew or kit building game. And he's come up with one called the Mini TX, and he's selling it on eBay, and he hopes to sell it on on a website. His operation's called Cycle 24 Kits. It's K-C-H-C-O-M. And you might want to check out on eBay right now his mini TX, all one word, M-I-N-I-T-X transmitters. They look like a lot of fun. And I got a last episode I mentioned that I thought I might have kind of, and this would have been poetic justice. I thought I might have fallen victim to an April Fool's operation. Somebody wrote in and said that when I talked about Hans Sommer's 30,000 lemons calculation, that might have been a bit tongue in cheek, a bit of kind of dry British humor. But no, Hans wrote that was for real. That was his real calculation of how many lemons it would have taken to lemons with metal electrodes placed in them to power his transmitter. So, okay, thanks for squaring that away, Hans. It was really a great article in Sprat. I thought there might have been, there was a possibility that one little bit of it might have been in the April Fool category, but okay, we'll keep in mind the 30,000 lemon category. Guys, I'm thinking lemons are not the way to go. Hans's article in the latest Sprat has some real good suggestions on more practical kind of natural power alternatives. Great. What else? That's it from the mailbag. Going to wrap up the show tonight, or today, this morning. Wrap up the show tonight. I'm sounding like Johnny Carson. But anyway, we have, as I mentioned, a great report from Steve WA0 PWK, who brings us a report on what he found at OzarkCon. And a couple of interviews that I think all of you will find very interesting. So thanks to Steve and to the QRP luminaries who he interviewed out there at OzarkCon. Thanks very much, and like I said, good luck to all of you who are heading out to FDIM. Here's Steve's contribution.
Well, last weekend I went to the 5th annual OzarkCon in Joplin, Missouri, which is right in the heart of the Ozarks. It's really beautiful country over there, and I had a great time. OzarkCon is put on by the 4-state QRP group, Joe, Gene, Dave, Bart, Tom, Terry, and the rest of the gang do a really good job of putting on a really nice show every year. The first order of business was to present Jim Dr. Megacycle Duffy, KK6MC, with his QRP Hall of Fame award plaque, which was originally supposed to be awarded at a different conference, but he was unable to attend that conference because of his daughter's wedding. Then Doug Hendricks, KI6DS, took over as the MC of the event. He's been the MC of OzarkCon since the inception. Doug is a QRP Hall of Famer, the co-founder of NorCal, and one of the main driving forces of QRP and home building. The first forum of the day was presented by Rex Harper, W1REX. He has a long history with computers and was ideal to present the Pickaxe microprocessor and some of the ways of using that. He's got a board called the Hatchet Board. It's a development board for the Pickaxe, and he showed a number of applications that it can be used for. The second forum was by Tommy Henderson, WD5AGO. His presentation was on microwave and QRP moon bounce. He discussed the bands available, he showed some antenna ideas, and he really was inspirational in showing how people who are living in antenna-restricted neighborhoods can still participate in moon bounce. Nick Kennedy, WA5BDU, who was mentioned in Solder Smoke 82, gave a forum on using some simple hardware and some free software to characterize crystals and design crystal filters. Steve Yates, AA5TB, gave a forum on natural and man-made signals in the ELF and VLF range. He had some audio files of tweaks, whistlers, and the dawn chorus, which are some natural phenomenon. it was interesting because a couple of the audience members recognized the Dawn Chorus as being a sound effect that they'd heard in a science fiction movie. The fifth form was from Graham Firth, who's a QRP Hall of Famer from England. He gave a brief history of ham call signs in England, and then his main presentation was on some simple test gear. A lot of it is from the book that he and Tony Fishpool wrote. He passed around some of his test gear and discussed its uses and its construction. As most of you know who have gone to these kind of conferences, a lot of the things that happen at them happen not at the forums, but at the socialization before and after the forums. Because of some previous commitments, I wasn't able to stay for the evening festivities, but I was able to get a couple of interviews for Solder Smoke. The first one was with Doug Hendricks. I'm here with Doug Hendricks, and we've just been at Ozark Con for 2008. It seems like the kit building industry is going really well. A lot of people feel they missed the Heathkit days, but it seems like there's a lot of them out there now. Would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, Steve, the kit building industry is a lot of cottage-type small companies have sprung up. Of course, you have Elegraft as a big player, but there are a lot of small companies like mine, and I actually think that the demise of Heath has helped that, and I think we're better off now than we were before because we have so many more small companies and so many more choices.
Well, it seems like a lot of the clubs are making some money to do some projects, and that's kind of difficult for them because of the investment. I know Ozark Con is funded by that.
Yes, they sell a couple of kits, and they've been selling them for 4 or 5 years, and they're getting kind of long in the tooth. I started NorCal with Jim Cates 13, 14 years ago, and we've used the kit method of, in fact, we were the first ones to use kits to finance things, and we've helped other clubs get started. And you have to keep a fresh kit. You need to come out with one or two every year.
It seems like some of the kits have been kind of passed around between a number of clubs now.
Yeah, we started that out with probably the 10 of 10 too. When Doug DeMaul died, I never got to meet Doug, but to honor him, I decided to have a good friend of mine, Dave Meacham, W6EMT, redesigned our, that's not the proper word, he updated the Tuna 10-2 to modern parts that you could get. And then I laid out the board, and we sold maybe a couple hundred kits for NorCal, and then New Jersey was just starting, so we gave them that kit to help them get started. And then it went to Jay Bromley at Arkansas, and they used it, and they passed it on to Rex Harper at Maine, where it is now. So it's helped. It's had a long history of helping clubs.
Does it seem like the move is kind of going away from Crystal Control now and some of these simple kits and more towards VFOs?
Yeah, it's because the VFOs are so easy to do now. I see a lot of stuff coming into DDS VFO, which is marvelous. It's so easy.
Well, it's really nice to see some really stable things out there that aren't rock-bound. There's been a lot of talk here on the QRPL list the last few weeks about the color of radios. Do you have any comment about that?
Yeah, I have a new radio coming out called a PFR-3, which is a three-band trail radio, and that was painted bright yellow. And the reason for that was because I've gone camping, and I found out how easy it is to lose something in a campground situation. So I thought about it, and I said, what's the brightest color you could have? And it's bright yellow, and that's the reason for that. And plus, it's reflective. It doesn't absorb heat nearly as bad as a black radio does.
Well, it looks like a really interesting radio. It seems to answer a lot of questions for a lot of people, has a lot of features that people are wanting, and we wish you a lot of luck with that. And thank you for talking with us and giving your greetings to all the Solder Smoke listeners out there.
It's my pleasure, and what an honor, and I want to say hello to Bill, and I love his Solder Smoke. It's a great deal. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Doug. The second interview is this one with Graham Firth. I'm here with Graham Firth, G3MFJ, and he's just given a talk here at Ozark Con about simple test equipment. If you had one piece of test equipment that you could not live without, what would that be?
It would be the Decade Resistor Box. It's really useful, isn't it?
when you're designing anything, that you can just pick a resistor and try their various values. That would be number one.
And what about number two?
Number two would be the ESR capacitor tester. That's another simple piece of equipment that there's been a lot of talk about recently on various places, and is really useful if you're having trouble with something that's got capacitors in. Interestingly enough, both of those are not in the current test equipment book, but we have high hopes that maybe in the future there may be another.
So this is something that might be in the works, maybe as a series of articles first, or do you have any particular plans?
No particular plans at this stage. The first test equipment book that Tony and I wrote started off as a series of articles, initially for Doug Hendricks' NorCal QRPP magazine, and we also did some for the New Jersey Club magazine. And so when we decided to produce the book, some of the work was already done. This time we're starting from scratch. And no, I don't think it will start off as articles. I think it will start off as a book. But don't hold your breath. I think it'll be a little while yet. But we have high hopes.
Well, it was a very interesting talk today. We were glad to see some of your test equipment. You brought quite a lot of it. And I believe you had some trouble in an airport at some point with some of this.
That was a number of years ago when traveling home from a Archicon at Fort Smith. When I got to Tulsa Airport, I told the check-in clerk that there were a lot of wires in my case, but they were all sane. The next thing I knew, I was being interviewed by a number of people who were worried that I was doing something I shouldn't have been done. Eventually, we got away on time, no problems, but it was fairly hairy for a little while.
Well, it's good to see that you escaped from that unscathed, that you aren't in Gitmo as we speak. And it was really good seeing you here at OzarkCon. Do you have any plans for any future American conferences soon?
Not at this stage. I would like to go to Dayton again, but it won't be this year. Having made one trip from the UK, then I have to save up again for next year. Maybe Dayton, maybe another one. We'll see.
Well, thank you so much for coming to OzarkCon, and thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Steve. I enjoyed it.
I hope all you Solder Smoke fans out there have enjoyed these interviews, and I really hope to go to OzarkCon next year. I can really recommend this conference to anyone who wants to go. 73 from Wichita, Kansas.
Great. Thanks again for that, Steve, and we'll look forward to the interviews in the same vein from FDIM. That's great. Okay, that wraps it up this morning from Rome. Have a good week. Hope the springtime's going well for all of you. We're in the northern hemisphere, and I hope the fall is not too difficult for those of you in the south. Keep the emails coming in. We really appreciate getting the feedback. 73 from Rome.